The Catholic Travel Journal, Episode 9.
Welcome to the Catholic Travel Journal on-demand radio show.
I'm Ian Rutherford.
And I'm Paula Rutherford.
For our 20th wedding anniversary, my wife suggested we go on a pilgrimage to Chartres. 80 miles, 3 days, 2.5 years to prepare. No problem.
Last week, we reviewed the Faithful Traveler in the Holy Land DVDs.
And they were great. So if you didn't get to listen to last week's show, go back to catholictraveljournal.com/8 to read our review, and please go get these DVDs. You'll love them.
And this week, we interviewed the host of The Faithful Traveler, Diana von Glahn.
So Diana, what does a pilgrimage mean to you? What does it mean for you to go on a pilgrimage?
Well, a pilgrimage is a lot of things, I think. A lot of things to me and a lot of things to a lot of people. First, I find the aspect of learning things to be very fascinating. You know, when you go somewhere, when you go on pilgrimage, you are essentially going to venerate an event or a person, and where you go has some kind of historical significance. So, you know, if you go to the Holy Land, obviously it, you know, all has such a biblical significance. But if you go to, you know, where a saint lived, like where Padre Pio lived, or where Saint Teresa of Avila lived, you know, you're going to honor those people. But you also have the opportunity to learn about their lives and to see how they lived and to meet the people that they grew up with, in a sense. You know, the people of that city are, you know, they're living the same life or a similar life. So I find that fascinating. Of course, there is the beauty aspect where you get to see things, you know, the people build beautiful things to venerate wonderful things or wonderful people. So that, you know, there's the architecture that you can see. But of course, there's the spiritual aspect of it. You know, a pilgrimage begins oftentimes months in advance of the actual trip. Because it's a lot of it is preparation. You're preparing yourself mentally and spiritually. You're either, you know, for instance, I'm going to be going to the Holy Land in 2 weeks. So I'm reading the Bible a lot. I'm reading about the places that I'm visiting. Before we went to Avila, I was reading a lot of St. Teresa of Avila's writing. So, you know, you prepare yourself mentally and spiritually. And then, of course, the actual trip itself is part of the pilgrimage. You know, some people will walk places, other people, I mean, that's what the whole Camino de Santiago de Compostela is, where people will walk from France all the way to the other side of Spain, you know, and that's part of the pilgrimage. The pilgrimage isn't necessarily arriving. It's the whole, the whole thing. So there's that. And then, you know, the idea is that you're offering up your sacrifices and you're offering up anything that happens that goes wrong, as things always do. And, you know, when you get there, usually, you know, you're giving thanks for, you know, prayers answered, or you're making appeals for things that you would like to happen. You know, and the goal is to take that pilgrimage and to keep it inside of you. You know, when we were in the Holy Land last, I met with a priest and he said, you know, the Holy Land is in all of us. And it's true. You know, it's where God is. God is in all of us and he resides in all of us. And we need to just be able to see that in each other. So, you know, and to remember that he is in you and he is in me and behave accordingly.
How did you end up deciding to do this Holy Land trip and documentary, and how did that all come together? Because it's more than just, I think I'm going to go on a pilgrimage for what you did.
Well, yeah. You know, we produced our first series. You know, we live in the Philadelphia area, and so we produced it basically by driving to places that were very close to us. We thought that, you know, the idea of a Catholic travel television series was a good one. We were not aware of any that did what we were looking to do or that had the same kind of feel that our pretend one, you know, our imaginary one would have. So we decided to do it ourselves. So we did. And then, you know, it came out on EWTN in March of 2010. It's been rerun since, and I'm sure they're going to rerun it again soon. But and then after that, we were kind of unsure as to whether or not we would have another series because, you know, we produce the show ourselves. We both have full-time jobs, and so our jobs pay for the production of the series.
You mean doing pilgrimage documentaries doesn't cover your living expenses? I don't understand.
It doesn't cover the expenses to produce it. No, I mean it's not a money making enterprise. So you know, the thing is that you need the money to produce the show, but in order to produce the show, you need the time. And so we were really at a standstill because we had already taken up all the vacation time that we had. Mm-hmm. So, we were kind of, you know, really bummed about it. And then, talk about God answering your prayers in completely crazy ways. We got a phone call from Select International Tours, which is a tour company that had recently been hired by the Archdiocese of Philadelphia to organize a tour to the Holy Land with Cardinal Regali, who was our archbishop at the time. And they wanted to hire somebody to basically create like a commercial for them. And so they called me, and I was like, you know, I don't do that, but I can do something else for you if you're interested. And, you know, fortunately, the owner, her name is Adita. She is just absolutely fantastic. She's really great about thinking outside of the box. And, you know, she'd never done anything like this. And, of course, neither had we. And she worked with us to make this just an exciting, awesome experience. We went with the pilgrimage. There were about 200 people who went. It was a really big pilgrimage. We'd never been on a group pilgrimage before. We'd never been to the Holy Land before. I never thought I would go to the Holy Land because it's far, and the news makes it seem like it's the scariest place in the yes. world. And, you know, it also seems like it's probably the most expensive thing in the world to go do, you know. But we were blessed with this opportunity, and you know, it really was amazing. And then, you know, I came home and edited the show, and it came out far better than I ever thought it would be. And then as a result of that, then the Israel Ministry of Tourism invited us to go back. And so, you know, now I'm just kind of like, wow, okay. You know? So it's really, I mean, it's really just you know, blessing after blessing. And we, you know, our goal is to, you know, we have a few goals. First of all, I really would love to entertain people. You know, I was just complaining on Facebook the other day about how there's not a lot of good stuff on TV, you know, and I like to watch TV. I like to be entertained. I like to laugh. I like to learn things. And so that's what I turn to the television to is, you know, I like to, you know, those like How Things Work and, yeah. and the travel series, you know, I find this stuff really fascinating. But I also love my faith, and it's a huge part of my life. And so I thought, well, why can't we teach other people what we do and why we do what we do and, you know, and do it in a way that they're not going to be put to sleep by it, you know? So that was really what we were hoping to do with the Faithful Traveler.
Very nice.
Very good.
So I want to recommend that everybody go back and listen to our last episode to get a kind of an overview of the whole DVD series and specific things about it. But we did have questions about the series that weren't covered in it. So if we could ask some of those, we'd love to get your feedback on those.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, totally. In fact, when I was listening to that, to your podcast, I sat here and I wrote down questions. So if you miss anything, I will let you know.
Okay, great.
So go for it.
You mentioned a lot of these different churches that were built in the early 1900s, late 1800s, 1950s and 60s, but you mentioned that they all seem to be built on top of the ruins of old churches. So for the last several hundred years, were these just ruins without anything on them, or was there something else there?
No, there were other things there. Well, you have to think about the history of Israel, which is it can be extremely confusing, but it's really pretty much the history of any country in the sense that, you know, there were a group of people there. Somebody else wanted to be there. They came, they conquered them, they kicked them out. They, you know, so that's kind of the history of the Holy Land is there are people supplanting people, And what happens is a lot of times they tear down the buildings that the other people built. They built something on top of it, and then they stay there until somebody else comes along and tears their buildings down. So, for instance, you know, if you think about, there are essentially at least three levels of ruins that many of these churches are built on top of. The first is the churches that were built in the 4th century by St. Helena. And obviously, when I say that, I don't mean she bent down and grabbed a trowel and started building herself. But, you know, she had other people build these churches. So St. Helena went to the Holy Land after Constantine said that Christianity was okay. And now, what was there beforehand? Well, think about it. You know, Jesus died, and there were Christians who lived in the Holy Land. Many of them were chased out. A lot of the disciples left, but some of them stayed. And so people would build small, kind of like small shrines, you know, kind of like they do now for people who die on the side of the road. You know, mm-hmm. like they would leave rocks, or they would put graffiti, and they would mark the place somehow, and they would go there. And so a lot of these churches have proof. For instance, when you go to Capernaum, which is where St. Peter lived, there is graffiti underneath, in the ruins underneath the church, that people venerated St. Peter's house after either he left or after he died, you know. That so this stuff dates back to like the first century, you know. So there are things like that that let people know. But like then what happens is, you know, the Jews were, or the Christians, the new Christians were persecuted. And so people built things on top of them. For instance, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, we did that little, you know, illustration. There was a temple to, I think it was a Greek goddess that had been built on top of Calvary, you know. And St. Helena came and tore it down, and then she, of course, tore down the entire mountain and built a church on top of it. And, you know, but so for other churches, there was like a church from St. Helena, and then somebody tore it down. And then the Crusaders came and they built a church, and then somebody tore that down. Or if it wasn't torn down, it could have come apart because of like a, you know, an earthquake. The area is very prone to earthquakes. You know, it might have just fallen apart. I mean, there are so many different reasons why these things, you know, buildings don't last forever. And so what happens is in the 19th century or the 20th century, I don't know who it was who decided that Antonio Barluzzi was basically going to build all of these insane churches in the Holy Land. And, you know, you mentioned in your earlier podcast that they're all such a different style. And you're absolutely right. They are totally different. You wouldn't know that they were the same architect unless somebody told you. But the great thing about it is that he clearly had a love of the faith, because so much of what he did, he built symbolically. So, for instance, you take the Church of All Nations, which is built in Gethsemane, the Basilica of Gethsemane, and, you know, you have the dark ceilings and the dark windows, and he wanted to evoke that darkness that Jesus felt in Gethsemane on the night of his agony. And he wanted us all to feel that, you know, and so the architecture reflects that. And then you have the church, which you called the Church of the Tear. It's actually called the Church of Dominus Flevit, which means God wept, because that's where Jesus, you know, he wept over the city of Jerusalem. And so the church is built in the shape of a tear. And, you know, the little vials that are up on the top corners, they're called lacrimatories, which are like people who, I don't know, had nothing better to do, would collect their tears in these little vials.
Professional mourners.
Exactly, you know. So, yeah, yeah, he's pretty amazing. And the churches that he built, he built a lot of them. And we tried to let people know in the show about, you know, which ones he built. He was amazing.
What was the food like?
And what did you enjoy the most while you were there eating?
Oh, it was amazing. Well, the food is essentially like the Mediterranean diet. So it's, you know, lots of hummus, which I absolutely love. Pita bread and, you know, baba ganoush and
okay, what is that?
Cheese and lots of tomatoes and What is what?
Baba Ganoush.
Baba Ganoush. Okay, have you ever had hummus?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Baba Ganoush is like hummus, but it's made out of eggplants.
Oh, okay. I think I've had that.
Pureed eggplant. So no, wait a minute. Now I'm confusing Baba Ganoush. No, it is. It is. That's the one. the other one that I was thinking of was tabbouleh. Tabbouleh is actually comes from Lebanon, but you know all these countries are very close to each other, and the people kind of share recipes and they share food, you know, kind types. Mm-hmm. And so tabbouleh is like couscous and herbs in there. But you know, actually, I want to take this opportunity to plug my friend Jeff Young. He's coming out with a new cookbook in November about the foods of the Holy Land, and a lot of it is going to be foods that he had when he was out there, because like I said, his thing is he's the Catholic foodie. So for those of you who have been to the Holy Land or who want to try what the food is like in the Holy Land, that's a really good opportunity to try that. But it's really healthy, you know, lots of good fats like olive oil and chickpeas, which make up the hummus, and so yeah, and lots of, you know, grilled meats like lamb or they use a lot of chicken for us Americans.
Uh-huh. Oh, too bad. So,
but yeah, it's really fun.
What's the most unusual dish that you were served while you were there?
Usually, the weirdest food experience in any country is breakfast.
Yes.
We Americans are used to our waffles and our pancakes and our cereals, right? And we like that, and it's good, and that's what wakes us up. But, like, you go to the Holy Land, and they're having nothing of the sort. You know, they're having, like, regular food. And most countries don't have specific breakfast foods. So, I think that, and so it's not like the food is particularly weird, but it was just like, okay, I'm going to have salad for breakfast. Yeah, that's just weird.
What one tip would you give to people who want to go on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land?
Oh, I have to narrow it down to one.
Well, if you have two, you can do that.
I would say, okay, I'll give you two. I'll give you two, and they're super important. Number one is plan a walking tour, like start walking before you go, so that because you're going to do a lot of walking when you get there, and it's good to be at least used to it. I happened to be doing this like crazy boot camp thing before I went on my trip to the Holy Land, and I didn't realize what good shape I was in until I got there, and I had to climb the steps up to Ein Kerem, which, you know, the Bible says is the hilly land. And let me tell you, there's a crazy mountain you have to climb to get to the Church of the Visitation. Everybody was huffing and puffing, and I was like, woohoo! And at that moment, I thought, wow, thank God I did that boot camp. But so that's what I would say is, you know, usually people plan these trips at least 6 to 8 months in advance to save money and, you know, start walking. You know, start with 15 minutes, then half an hour, then, you know, if you can get up to at least an hour a day, great, you know. But at least, you know, a half an hour a day would be great. The second thing that I would recommend is when you are in the Holy Land, drink water, because dehydration is crazy and it happens. And it makes you exhausted. It makes your muscles tired. But the thing is that you're running around and you don't have access to water. So what a lot of these tour, if you go on a group tour, what a lot of them do is they will offer you bottles of water for like a dollar. So bring lots of dollars or bring a bottle so that you can fill up, you know, because drinking water is huge. So those are my two big tips.
All right, great. Now, one of the things that you stop by to visit and you just, it kind of went by fast in the DVD, was the tomb of St. David, which isn't really his tomb.
Yes.
And
yes.
So what exactly is that?
That made me laugh when you said that. okay, the reason why I'm going to let you into a production secret.
Uh-oh.
The reason why I stayed on it so briefly is because we didn't get enough footage of it.
Oh, okay.
So that was bad. Right? I mean, so the thing about the Tomb of St. David, okay, that has been there for a while, not a long time, and I couldn't tell you exactly the year, I forget, but pretty much everybody agrees that it is not the tomb of St. David, because the Bible specifically says where he was buried. And as I recall, it says he was buried in the city of David, which is further down the hill from the old city of Jerusalem. It's outside the gates. So archaeologists, Jewish historians, most people know that that's not the tomb of St. David. And it has been proven that St. David is not in that coffin. What is it? It's essentially like a shrine, you know? Yeah, I mean, like, you know, when we go to, like, you think about places that we go to venerate somebody, you know, and they're not there, and they might not have ever been there, you know? But essentially, it's an opportunity for Jews to pay homage mm-hmm. to St. David, who had such a huge, you know, I mean, it's because of him that the Jews were in Jerusalem. Well, obviously, it's because of God that the Jews were in Jerusalem, but, you know, St. David brought them there. So, you know, so that's essentially what it is. But nobody's in that tomb. And I'm, you know, unless the mafia like snuck somebody in there, but, but yeah, no, it's just an opportunity for them to venerate him.
Mm-hmm. So what was it like going on this pilgrimage and having, what kind of equipment did you have to take with you to do all this filming? Was it a lot of stuff you were hauling around the whole time? What was that like?
Well, when we went, we had two camera people, one of whom was my husband, and then the other was a woman that we have hired in the past. Her name is Sonia Stark, and she's a freelance camera person and really great person. And so it was essentially me and them, the two of them. And David had two different kinds of cameras that he would bring, you know, like depending on where we were going. And Sony had her one camera that she would take everywhere. And you know, they just carried it everywhere they went. And, you know, sometimes some of the pilgrims would help like Sony with her tripod, or, you know, sometimes we would, I mean, sometimes I would be carrying things. But I mean, you know, the goal is to travel light because you're walking a lot. On this upcoming pilgrimage that we're going, well, we're not really going on pilgrimage this time. This time we're just going to go film. There are going to be, five of us. Me, my husband, and two camera guys, and then one sound guy. They're going to bring a lot of equipment, but a lot of it is going to be small and portable. So, you know, the idea is just run and gun. You just go, you grab what you can, you do what you can. And so, for instance, one thing we're not bringing is lights. You know, we don't have the time to sit and set up lights. Like, we're just going to be shooting what we can. We're going to be using the light that we have. So the cameras that we use are very good in low light situations. You know, you just need to know. And that's where, when knowing the kind of equipment that is out there and knowing what kinds of things you're going to be experiencing is helpful. Because, for instance, in the Church of All Nations, where it's extremely dark, you need a camera that can get very good footage mm-hmm. that's not too grainy in low light.
Yeah, the film from that church was wonderful.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, it was great. That was great. That was mostly, interestingly enough, that was mostly Sonia who shot that day, because David, I think I mentioned it in the show, David fell on when we were doing the Via Dolorosa. He fell and tripped over something. And fortunately, the camera was fine, but his ankle, I think his knees, I think they got really swollen, and he had to stay in the hotel one day. So, you know, but yeah, you know, like I said, things happen. I mean, things happen. I was sick the whole time. I mentioned it, you know, and I'm praying to God that I don't get sick this time.
Well, it didn't sound like it. Apart from that, the morning when you went on the Via Dolorosa, I didn't notice anything in the DVDs.
Well, that's good. That's what most people said. You know, it's like, oh, you looked great. You sounded great. Like, I was in so much pain.
Okay, now, you are looking at the most wonderful thing you saw on this pilgrimage. What is it?
The Sea of Galilee. It is unreal. I don't know what it is about water, because I felt the same thing the first time I saw the Mississippi River. it made me cry. You know, I was just like, oh my gosh, this thing is so big. I love art. I love architecture. And I love to see a pretty church. You know, the church of all nations, which is built in the Garden of Gethsemane, is probably one of my favorite churches in the Holy Land because it's very symbolic and it's beautiful. It was built by that architect whose name you couldn't remember, Ian. His name is Antonio Barluzzi.
That's right.
Is the architect. It's a hard name. It's Italian. So there, the thing about nature is it's God being the architect and God being the artist. And I love that. I love seeing what he creates. So
now, is there anything that you did not get to do that you wish you had?
I would have really loved to have walked under and over the walls of Jerusalem. I understand that you can do that. And we're actually planning a pilgrimage in 2015 in the spring. Hint, hint, Paula. But we're gonna include that on our trip. We're gonna let people come with. You know, we're gonna go in the and you know, there's so much history in there. I mean, like I said, you know, these walls were built by successive people, and they were improved upon by successive people, and there are ruins underneath them. So it's really fascinating. And then, of course, on top, you can see, like, everything. And so I really would have liked to have seen that. There's also a place called Masada, which is it's a very historical place because there were some Jews who died. They actually committed suicide there, which is really sad. But it's also just a beautiful place to go. It's out in the middle of the desert, and just really nice. So yeah, there are a lot of people that I follow. There's one woman who will be interviewing on our trip. Her name is Elisa Moed, and she writes a blog called Travelusia. And she's always talking about what life is like in the Holy Land. She lives out there. And it's just so fascinating, you know. And it's funny, Paula, to hear you say that, you know, you thought it was a desert, because I think so many of us do. We don't realize, like, when, you know, when people say it's the land of milk and honey, we're like, mm-hmm, yeah, whatever.
Really good marketing. So
powdered milk and honey.
Yes. Seriously, so we're like, okay, but it really is just amazing, and there's so much that people do there, and people live normal lives there, you know. Like, one of the things that we're going to do when we go, we are going to visit with a guy who, he is born and raised in Nazareth. He moved to California, you know, had some kids there, and then moved back to Nazareth. And so he's like a native, him and his wife, his name is Habib, he's fantastic. He and his wife are native Nazareans. And which is crazy just to say, you know. But
can anything good come from Nazareth?
He's going to take me to an ice cream place, and I'm so excited. I know, right? I'm so excited that he's taking me to this ice cream place, because I love ice cream. But also, like, you know, people have normal lives there, you know. So it's just good to realize, and it's nice to experience.
So, is there any pilgrimages that you want to go on that don't involve film crews and documentaries?
The problem is at this stage that everywhere I go, I find places just because I am drawn to these places. You know, I have been going to Catholic places my whole life because I find this stuff interesting. So when we go to Spain, for instance, you know, we went to Toledo and we went to Sevilla. We went to all the churches, and that was what I found fascinating. You know, it was like, I didn't really care about the museums unless they had sacred art, because that's what I think is interesting. You know, I get really bored with, you know, like modern art, whatever. I don't care, you know, but, so the problem is I go to these places and I think, I want to shoot here. I want to show these places to people.
Yeah.
And so we're actually, I know it's pathetic, right? Well, we're actually planning a filming pilgrimage in October where we're going to be taking people with us to Spain, and we will be filming the next series of the Faithful Traveler. So we're going to be going to Avila. We will be in Avila on the Feast of St. Teresa of Avila, which is awesome.
Okay, and, I'm going with you, and I don't care what anybody says.
Oh, yeah,
tell me when and where I can get the money.
It's going to be, I'm just now finishing up the final touches on my website. I'm going to send out an email blast about this, telling people about it. But, like, I basically had to redesign my entire website to include these pages because I messed it up the first time. But it's going to be, let me see, I'll pull this up. I know, it's really, it's going to be amazing. It will be October 12th through the 24th. It's a 13-day trip. We're going to be going to Madrid. We'll be in Avila for 2 days. We're going to be in Toledo for 2 days. We're going to Zaragoza, which I don't know if you're familiar with Zaragoza. Okay, so you know, after Jesus ascended into heaven, all of the disciples kind of scattered, right?
Right.
One of the disciples, St. James, went to Spain. So, and we know this because he ended up in Compostela, which is where people do Santiago de Compostela. The idea is that there's a big church in Compostela, which is the name of the city, where Santiago, St. James, is buried. So, now on his way, St. James was, you know, he was really bummed. I mean, Jesus was gone, everybody split up. I'm sure he was just like, what am I doing in this country? And what happened was he was in Zaragoza and the Virgin Mary appeared to him. And so this is the first ever apparition of the Blessed Virgin Mary to anybody, but it happened to St. James the Apostle and it happened in Zaragoza. So in that city, they built the most amazing cathedral, so we're going to be going to that. Then we're going to spend 2 days in Lourdes, which is right across the border. We're going to go down to Barcelona, and we're going to be in Barcelona for 3 days. We're going to go to the beautiful mountaintop monastery of Montserrat, and then we're going to go to not all of them, but I mean, there are so many churches in Barcelona. There are 5 basilicas in Barcelona. There's a beautiful church atop a mountain that's right next to an amusement park. So we're going to go like ride the rides and then go do adoration. I mean, it's going to be so amazing. And then we're going to be filming the show. So, you know, if people are interested in seeing what that's like, or, you know, I mean, of course, if they even want to be in it, you know, we're just going to be doing this. And we thought it would be fun. We thought it would be an interesting thing that people might like. And so, yeah, so that's going to be real soon.
And what is your website so people can go find out more about your current shows and your future pilgrimages?
Our website is www.thefaithfultraveler.com, and you can currently, well, we haven't put up information about the pilgrimage that I just mentioned. There is information about our Holy Land pilgrimage. We don't have dates for that yet because we're still waiting to find out if a priest that I invited will come with us. But it will be up, like I'm planning on putting it up this weekend. So, it's thefaithfultraveler.com. You can order our DVDs on there. I ship, you know, pretty quickly. Of course, you know, order before the 20th if you're going to order, because then I'm going to be in the Holy Land for 2 weeks. So, yeah.
Okay, great. Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to be on our show today. I'd love to have you back sometime to talk more about your other trips that you go on.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, I look forward to do you guys know where you're going to go on this, like, big pilgrimage? Have you decided?
Yes. Yes, we're going on to Chartres. We'll be doing the 3-day walk from Notre Dame, Paris to Notre Dame, Chartres. It was a great interview. I'm glad we got to talk to Diana, especially after reviewing the show.
So which pilgrimage do you want to go on with her next?
Yes. I'd really love to go to Spain. That's you know, that's the homeland, and I've never been there, and I'd really love to.
That would be fun. I've been to Spain, but it was in college, and I wasn't really looking at pilgrimage sites, although I did get to see Sagrada Familia in Barcelona, which was gorgeous, even though it's not been finished yet.
Well, have you seen the websites where they show how it's going to be finished or what the plans are?
Oh, yes. I think I saw those. You think you showed them to me. I'm going to put a link in the show notes once I find those again so people can see what the finished product will look
really
like.
Really neat the way they kind of look like they were pouring on the
spires and stuff.
Yes.
One interesting thing about the cathedral is that the end result is not going to look exactly like the original plans, because there was a fire in the workshop where Gaudi worked that burned up all of his original plans.
Oh.
So the current designs are based on the memories of his assistant, because I think at that point he had already died. So his assistant redrew the plans as best he could. So the finished product is going to be different than the original plan. Next week on the show, we are going to be interviewing one of the students from Colorado State University who is going to be part of a mission trip to Rwanda. He and his group are also going to go to the shrine of Our Lady of Quibejo on a pilgrimage. So we'll try to talk to him when they get back from that experience as well. We really appreciate your listening to our show, and we'd love for you to come visit our website. If you have a chance, please leave us feedback on iTunes. You can find a link at catholictraveljournal.com/iTunes.
You can leave comments for this particular episode and find links to all of the places we talked about at catholictraveljournal.com/9.
Until next time, we ask St. James, patron of pilgrims, to watch over all those preparing for or already on a pilgrimage. St. James, pray for us.